Hello, and welcome to this podcast, Agents of Data. My name's Joe. I'm one of the leaders of our agentic AI platform here at Matillion, and I'm joined today by our co-host, Julian Whiffen, our chief of AI here at Matillion, and our lead software engineer, Sam Perrin, who has designed and built Maya, our agentic AI platform that sits inside the Data Productivity Cloud. In this episode today, we're going to get into what does agentic AI mean? What are some of those additional artifacts that are new to organizations that they need to be thinking about? And also, what does agent-to-agent communication look like in the future? And what does MCP stand for? As well as other things like understanding the importance of context and how businesses can start to leverage the context inside their own organization to build on their agentic AI strategic initiatives. Well, welcome, Sam. Lovely to have you with us, Julian. Fantastic. How are you both doing?
Yeah, it's good to be here, mate. Good to be here. Doing well.
We'll do some introductions then, shall we? Get us all acquainted. My name's Joe. I'm a go-to-market AI specialist here at Matillion. I've been working with both of you for quite some time. And this is our idea that spun out of San Francisco, where we launched our agentic AI product, Maya, about actually how do we talk about what agentic AI is, and also how to end users understand that. And we thought that perhaps this podcast would be a really useful position to help others understand a bit about what agentic AI means, but then also listen to some of the wizardry that is behind the scenes. And so that's why we've got the two of you here today. And the wizard on my right, Julian, would you like to give an introduction to yourself?
Yep, my name is Julian. I'm Matillion's chief of AI, and my team tend to lead the research and investigation of PoCs into how we can bring AI capabilities into our product. And we work hand in glove with the man on my right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I'm Sam Perrin. I am one of the lead engineers of Maya, our virtual team of data engineers. Also a big advocate of how we use AI in engineering, coding agents, those sorts of things. So yeah, just getting involved in all that. It's certainly an exciting time, isn't it?
It is an exciting time. And I think the format of this conversation, this podcast, is going to be around how do we actually tap into both of your expertise in designing and building agentic AI systems, and also trying to understand what is an agentic AI, what does that mean? And I guess that's our sort of first question for today. Do either of you want to take a stab of defining what agentic is?
It's quite hard to define. Like, people define it in different ways. The end of the day for me, it's about using AI to power complicated processes, but you use the AI as the kind of decision maker in there. It's not a human, it's virtual, autonomous or semi-autonomous in some cases.
The analogy I like using is like moving from a single AI LLM process is like an individual contributor. An agentic system is more like a manager with a team of individual contributors, a team that the lead agent chooses which members of the team it wants to play, which tools it wants to invoke. And each one has more specialized capabilities.
The Anthropic have a really good page blog post they did on this called Building Effective Agents that details the different kind of agents you can build, from workflow orchestration all the way to fully autonomous decision-making agents that call different tools and things like that. I would highly recommend people read that, to be honest.
And so listening to you both there, sort of just trying to distill and describe what that agentic is around AI, it sounds like it's more than just another large language model integration that you can use for a single purpose. It's actually about empowering something, some agent that's in control of other agents as part of a framework, and
that allows you to have the agent specialized in different ways. It's
right.
There might be some tasks where there's large volumes of text to process, but the level of reasoning you need is not very high. So you might use a simpler, smaller model for that's faster and cheaper.
Okay.
And there are some where you need a higher level of reasoning. You might bring a different model in that space. Other tasks might be ones where you want to give very specific wordings to the prompts to make sure the agent's got a very specialized remit to only do one thing.
But you're describing different roles that are currently taking place in businesses and organizations today, reading through reports or reading through PDFs or transcribing calls. And that's you're describing these as things that agentic AI can do and help with. But then underneath that umbrella term of agentic AI, there are these t- tasks or there are these particular processes that businesses and our customers today are already aware of. And like, do we want to talk a little bit about like what's in scope?
For, yeah, like those types of tasks, like
what's not in scope at the end of the day? Right. You know, most information technology style workflows, processes. You know, and me as a software engineer, like agentic coding is like the thing at the moment. And in you know, we're in the data engineering world as a business, and feel like data engineering lags behind software engineering. But we're, you know, we're getting towards that, and now. You've got entire engineering teams becoming 10x more efficient by building and using coding agents such as Cursor, AMP, Claude Code is my personal favorite at the moment. And these things are, you know, that's just coding. You've got data engineering in our case with Maya, where we're, you know, building data pipelines through the natural language, through the agents, but then all the way down to like, you know, you're doing deep research in ChatGPT, you're using that as a, you know, planning your itinerary for a trip to Seville, for example, in my case, like that's an agentic process of crawling the web and going and picking information off of there.
So are people already using it? Like, that's a really great point. That last one, if you double clicking on that, are people already using agentic AI when they're interacting with some of those LLMs in that UX interface? Like, is you know, and they're just unaware that is agentic.
You've got a system instead of you might be talking to one, but in the background that's talking to other LLMs that have got slightly different remits, and or invoking tools because the tool invocations are really just a set of instructions to say, okay, you can call this tool to get a report or to search the web and get a bone. Doing the equivalent of, in Sam's Seville example, you might have one with a tool call for web search and like, okay, go and Google hotels in Seville and bring back the results of that Google search to the main agent who then says, here's the three hotels I think match what you've said you're looking for best.
The key part in that workflow is the agent part in the middle. It's not just a prescribed process of go and find me 10 of these things. Are they relevant? It's the agent or the LLM in the middle there deciding whether it thinks they're relevant or, oh, maybe I've not got enough information yet, so I should go and fetch some more information.
So the ability...
That agent's choosing what to Google, effectively.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're using some interesting terminology here, right? Because like we're saying that this to be an agentic AI system, there is something in the middle that is deciding. That is making a decision based on the information that it's being fed. And like that's the kind of the biggest leap we've seen, right, in the past 12 months of going from just that single interface with LLMs to now actually having all of these communicate together.
Some of it's about also constraining the output options that it has because it's decided which tools to use. So previously, with your general ChatGPT interactions, you put some text in, it gives you a big block of text and answer. Whereas if you start to put some constraints to say, okay, here's the four different levers you can pull. Here's the four different answers you can choose from about, okay, respond to the user with text, go and Google something, look at some other source of data, call another tool, call a tool for a booking line for one of the hotel systems to actually place the booking.
Yeah.
And you're forcing it to say, okay, you've actually got to pick one of those four options and decide what you're going to do rather than just give me unconstrained text.
Okay. Wow. I mean, so that offers a lot of... you know, impact for where it can be used. Maybe you're like, I think some of our listeners, some of our customers are already thinking about, well, yeah, but what does this actually mean for like where I could deploy it inside of an environment? So like perhaps we'll come on to you, and you mentioned Maya in your response there, Sam, we'll come on to that in a little bit about what that offers. But just taking a step back out and thinking, if I'm a chief data officer of an organization that is, you know, day-to-day being fed with all of these different AI products that can offer similar levels of agentic AI, but also actually taking a holistic view of where do I pick which things that we want to have an agentic AI system play, where do we see like that going in the market? Where do we see that sort of funnel of discovery going down to, well, this is where a really suitable role for an agentic AI system is? Yeah. It's quite a hard one, sorry.
I think people are trying to figure it out still, but The most obvious ones to start with when the first got seemed to be the ones we had simple tasks. We used to talk about the infinite intern, which was the, if I could give somebody some simple instructions and go and sit in a room and do this repeated task, they didn't need to know anything else, but I want you to go and read this document and process it or flag it or give me some sort of information out of it. That was a suitable task for an LLM. Now it's their scope and their skill is expanding significantly, and we're looking at places where you still need a lot of human thought, but the agentic framework can grant maybe a junior member of a team, the skills of a senior, or allow a senior member of the team to really scale up. So the most obvious place is the way you've got really resource constrained bottlenecks. And that's where we see it in data engineering, because there's no data engineering team in the world that's got excess or surplus capacity. They're always bombarded with requests for more data or more analysis. And something that allows their teams to scale up is a very powerful, therefore a very powerful offering.
So it's almost identifying the human workforce bottlenecks that exist in that organization today, being then a primary driver for where you think about deploying agentic AI. And that doesn't necessarily just need to be data engineering. We'll maybe come on to that in a second. But Sam, how would you approach it if you were thinking, because you do a lot of development in agentic AI systems already as part of your like day-to-day role, but how do you personally like prioritize where you think you know when to use agentic AI and when not to?
Yeah, it totally depends on the use case. Like, I mean, often, like, obviously LLMs, which power all this, it's text, right? They use text or voice, or, you know, if you have voice data, it gets turned into text and then fed to an LLM. So anything textual, code, data, like most of the format of data we have CSV files everywhere. You just have even your instructions, or, you know, another use case that I might use day to day is like, no one in software engineering likes to write Jira tickets or epics and things like that. But at the end of the day, I can now take a few bullet points of text and turn that into a completely defined epic of user stories.
Flesh things out or anything. The fact that we can now do with this stuff that previously you couldn't do programmatically, because you need to precisely codify every step or every decision. Okay. But now you can give a set of bullet point instructions and say, okay, check this against our standards, check this doesn't break any rules. And only in your non-functional requirements and other sanity checks.
It's the unstructured data, isn't it? Like, I mean, it can work with structured data, but like that's generally already a solved problem. And obviously you can have semi-structured data, but unstructured data, this is the world we're in now. Like previous use cases of data engineering, for example, where you just have like call transcripts, like bucket loads of them. Well, they're just like literally people's words in like a massive long transcript. Like previously it would have been really hard to pick that apart and analyze it. And now you literally just pick an off the shelf model like OpenAI GPT or Claude, and suddenly you can just drive all these insights out of it. That's like untapped knowledge.
Just by targeting simple, asking for simple judgment calls on that unstructured data.
You know? Yeah, and you're using
are they talking about this topic in the first part of the call? That kind of.
Yeah, and it's the combination of now you've got like software engineering problems where you've got this audio file of like a call, and now you use like a managed service to extract the text transcript out, and then you fire the transcript into an LLM, and it's just like, wow, this is data I never thought I could extract in that way.
Unless you combine unstructured and structured sources as well.
Let's double click into that.
Yeah.
So what, I feel like we're going to edge into data engineering territory now,
but to keep it at a high level, so you might, the sort of things where previously you might, a human would do a lot of crunching reports, like I have to read a whole lot of text and then summarize it.
Yeah.
And then I might look at a bunch of numerical data alongside that, regardless of whatever I'm doing. Whereas here you can have the LLM do a lot of that work. It might be, let's say I'm looking at customer churn prediction.
Yeah.
The data scientist world is very numerical models, looking at how many support cases they raise, how much they're using, what price they're paying, all those kind of things that feed into an old school numerical model. But here we can put that alongside, here's all the call transcripts we have with them, here's all the support call notes, here's all the account manager's notes to say that the customer's really unhappy about X, Y, Z, and use that to produce a summary that's at a humanly consumable scale of like a paragraph or two to say, here's why we think this one's at a high risk of churning, and here's the two or three bullets out of this 50 pages of data that are here's what they're really unhappy about and what the heart of the issue is.
And going back to like that agentic way of thinking about solving that problem, like is there a risk here for a CFO or for a decision maker in a business making decisions based off this data that, oh, actually the AI is almost prioritizing for me what a combination of that looks like? Let's unpack like what that risk means for a business, because like there's guardrails that there may need to be put in place, but like to help our listeners understand what does that decision process look like today? Like, I mean, I don't know who wants to fit that one off first, but.
If I was going to use all this AI today, build an agentic system, how do I know that it's actually performing and answering in the right way?
Well, how would I like? How would I be sure that the quality of the, because the, if the agentic AI system is making a decision on the free text summary coming in from the calls, but then also the structured data that we have in our database, and it's making a decision based off of the blend of that. How do we know what the quality of that decision looks like?
Yeah, so there's a few ways, right? The basic one that probably everyone will still do for a while is human in the loop, right? Like these processes might result in an action or something being generated that effectively, like, you know, pays an invoice, but you know, you still want a human to go, here's the invoice, here's the data that built this invoice, I'm going to hit approve on that manually, and then that goes through and gets paid or something. Then the other side of it is, as you start to build sophisticated agents, and Julian and I experienced it this right now, is evaluations of the model and its performance over tasks, building a framework around that. But it's really complicated, really hard to do.
You're probably going in the scale, kind of scale path in terms of, you start with human in the loop.
Yeah.
Like it's about building up trust and confidence in these things and or understanding whether it's doing the right thing. That kind of decision-making would be subject to quality control in no different way if you had a bunch of humans doing it, really. That you're like, okay, are my juniors making the right calls as they're reading through the stuff and summarizing its reports? Yeah. Well, periodically you're going to say, well, show me where you got that information from.
Right.
Build confidence in that person that they've got a sound, they're judging things the way you want. So with the agentic systems, what you're probably doing to start with, obviously, Sam says, you start with a human in the loop. Like, okay, it's doing the prep work, but a human's always hitting the button, is always reviewing it.
Okay.
The next step is probably then, the human only reviews a small sample. You know, your quality control, like a factory or a process, you might say, all right, we'll inspect 5% of the transactions and see what, and check that the expert still agrees with the large language model output. You can also then start to look at AI as a judge, where you use another large language model to review the decision and say, does this comply with these criteria? Does this meet our standards? But you still got to calibrate that with the human. But you get into the business of, we'll do an exercise of marking the judge's work to say, is it scoring correctly? Do I trust the judge? Okay, now I trust the judge. I can scale up hugely.
Do you think we're getting to the point where now we're going to see agentic to agentic cross-checking and references?
Yeah,
we're already asking
for a second opinion.
We've all, like, in our process for Maya right now, in the behind the scenes, we actually have a judge.
Yeah.
We actually have a judge LLM. LLM as a judge that is the user and drives the conversation because it's non-deterministic. So you give that user a role and a goal, and it has the conversation with Maya. And then on the other side of it, we're actually building an evaluation agent that looks at the result of what that conversation's had and evaluates the conversation in the unique ways that it may have played out.
Yeah.
So let's dive into that in some more detail. But first, should we set the scene a little bit on what Maya is? Because we've used the phrase a couple of times. For us here at Matillion, it's become our biggest strategic objective and goal that we're working towards building into our platform, the Data Productivity Cloud. And the Data Productivity Cloud, for those who haven't used it before, is that easy to use interface that allows to move data from your on-premise cloud-hosted systems into your Snowflake, Redshift, Databricks, and it's doing all of that in a YAML-based file, which is visualized in a drag-and-drop interface. We've got leading CI/CD within the product as well, and now we're bringing Maya into that Data Productivity Cloud space, our agentic AI system that is helping end users be more productive with their day-to-day tasks. And so that's kind of a little bit about where Maya is currently in the Data Productivity Cloud. But you just touched on a really interesting point that I want to come back to, Sam, which is there's this ability within Maya today for it to act as a judge and to actually be driving that conversation interaction with the human, but setting out the goal that the human is trying to achieve and almost self-correcting as it goes through.
So it's a little bit different than that. It's that we have Maya. Maya's all glamorous Maya, which you as a human converse with. We then build other agents that aren't technically Maya that simulate a human user using Maya to drive a conversation to achieve a goal. And then we use a third agent to evaluate and score that conversation, how successful was the pipeline? Did it do the right things and that sort of stuff?
And that lets us test at scale, because obviously with a non-deterministic system, like any of these agentic things, you've got a randomness. So anytime you want to do tests, it's not like a single set of unit tests. You want to run them 10, 20, 50 times and say, okay, 93% of the time it got it right. Is that good enough kind of scale? Or 20% of the time I got it right? No, clearly we need to fix that use case. But you can't get that level of scale with human resource. You've got to have a way of automating it. And this approach is how we do that.
Okay. I mean, this is brand new news to me. This sounds really exciting. There's agentic systems that we've built, Maya, that's also talking to other agentic systems that are performing scalable tests, almost simulation environments that we can then increase the overall intelligence of Maya with.
Yeah, so it would let us test like variations of how we set it up, what models we use and the like at scale.
Okay. And before we get into the detail of what Maya can offer, like as in how it can be adapted to a particular environment, if we could take a step into the world of like more just agentic to agent to agent communications for a second, this will be, you might have heard like A2A or MCP. This will be quite new to a lot of our audience. Should we just scene set for a second? What does that mean? Why is it born?
Yeah, so you summarized two there, and they're like the common protocols. There's a few others, but MCP was kind of came out of Anthropic originally, but is probably the most adopted one now. Now, LLMs, the good LLMs or the more recent ones have something called tool calling. That's where they generate like a structured response that you can then programmatically call within your code, and then you return that response to the LLM, and the LLM kind of reacts to it. Those tools you often define as software, just as you would if you were writing any software. Right. And what MCP does is it's like a discovery, like protocol, a bit like REST APIs were for kind of standard interactions of like microservices or just software. MCP is like, they're calling it like the USB port for AI and agentic systems.
So, USB-C, yeah?
Yeah, I hope so.
It's the manual or the brochure for the agent to read. So the same way a human user would read it and say, okay, here's how I call this API to get information. You're telling the agent how to do it, and the agent's going, yeah, that sounds like what I need. All right, I'll send that call. I'll configure my request and send that to get information.
So this is peeking into the future of how these systems are going to communicate with each other.
Yeah. I know that my voice is very croaky. The A2A spec is like a whole level above that, whereas we have NCP that will kind of declare the tools that are available for a service. And then that might be something like Atlassian release, like one that declares tools how to read Confluence files or create Jira tickets. A2A is quite different. A2A is maybe not as adopted yet. It's a bit more new, and there's not a lot of agent-to-agent use cases out there, I don't think. But that's a similar protocol, but all based on like tasks and execution. So an agent will say, I'm this agent and my task is to do X, or this is my role, declare itself using like a well-known agent JSON file. And then your agent can look for those agents and just call them and execute the tasks that that agent has. And it can ask for the status, and it can stream it back, and it's all pretty cool.
That sounds amazing. So this is where A2A is essentially greeting another human, or is that access control request that comes in? Do I have permission to do this? And here's what I need to do. And it's giving then the here's what I need to do to that other system. Okay, I think I'm getting it.
And we're seeing that could be a view of the future of what we need to serve with Maya, which is at the moment obviously we're gearing Maya up for human users. But we expect it to be other agentic systems talking to Maya, particularly because we're in the data engineering space, and they're going to want to request data. You might have a one from a data visualization platform saying, "Hey, Maya, can you bring in this additional table and add these columns so that I can bring this into my report?"
Right.
And the data visualization tool might go, "I haven't got that." It's got to pass that request on to Maya. Maya works out how to bring in the new data. Yeah. Reports back when it's done. And then the visualization system can pick it up and say, okay, now I can add the extra columns to the chart or whatever it is.
And so that end-to-end process that you were describing there, that's taking like a series of teams of human people today in all of our customer base, in all of our organizations globally, a lot of time to get that visualization built, or get the answer that they're looking for, all the way back from those source systems and marry that up. And for those of you, for those of us that are not in the world of data engineering, that is kind of what data engineering is all about, right? Is connecting those source systems to those target systems to help get that visualization downstream. So double clicking into what does data engineering mean for this A2A communication in the future? Are you saying that there's going to be a space where Maya is this A2A communicator with other systems? Is that?
Yeah. It could be either way, right? I mean, it could be that you have a BI dashboard and you ask it a question and that BI tool realizes it doesn't have the data it needs. So then calls Maya to build that data, pull into the, you know, the bronze layer, do some sort of refinement of that data, and then leaves it there and returns back to the BI tool and says, hey, this data is ready for you. And then the BI tool goes and does its SQL generation and builds a pipeline. But because on the flip side, we might eventually have, you know, other agents that we want to talk to, maybe Atlassian. Again, I'll use them as an example. They build an agent that can just like look across Atlassian, answer business questions in your Confluence, your Jira. What would be really useful for a user of like Maya, for example, would be if we called to their agent, say, hey, user's looking for this piece of information. Can you find it? We'd talk to their agent and we get it back.
Yeah.
So
amazing.
All sorts of opportunity there. But it's definitely like MCP is by far the biggest one at the moment.
Right. Okay.
It's a little bit easier.
And what, forgive me, what is MCP? And what is that? Is that something protocol, I'm guessing?
Model context protocol, I think.
Okay. So let's talk about context then. Like what's that? Is that relevant to building agentic AI systems? What's the relevance there for that?
Yeah. And well, passing the right context with the question is always important for any Gen AI piece where you're giving the background. Okay. What do these terms mean? What do I want you to think about? And a lot of it is just, with the MCP side, is how one system frames a request to another. And how do I format it?
So I'm booking my holiday to the beach.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be giving it the context in ChatGPT or in whatever large language model that I'm choosing to use, Gemini.
Yeah.
So my context bit is it me describing what I'd like to see?
Yeah, it's everything.
Or is it?
Okay. It's everything. And this is the... like the reality is your prompt is a context and then the tools are used to do retrieval augmented generation, fancy way of saying go and grab relevant content and include it in the prompt. Tools are used to retrieve information or potentially like, I don't know, manipulate state in a system somewhere. But a lot of the time booking your trip to the beach or whatever, it might go and use a web search tool. And that web search tool is, Model Context Protocol says, here's a web search tool. This is its input. This is what it returns. So you query it, pull in the context, and then that context is then in the prompt.
Yep. Okay. The context for the web search tool might be, okay, what's the search term you're going for? How many results do you want me to plug you back? That kind of level of...
But this is a whole new, that's just a whole new way of thinking about in terms of day-to-day business about how do we like provide that right level of context to our end users that are maybe wanting to build agentic AI systems, but then also.
Sometimes you're formalizing what in a human process would be an informal agreement. Everyone right, commonly understands that if I request something from another team, say I request a report from another team, I probably need to explain what data I want. I need to explain when I want it by. I probably need to say what format it, what platform I want the output in or what format I want the output in, those kind of bits of information. And it's formalizing just enough of that the LLMs can provide it, even though it doesn't have to be a programmatic, every variable perfectly filled in.
Okay.
But it's just giving the right shape of what's needed.
And so that's a whole new field of view and place for businesses to start thinking about preparing for the creation of the context and where that context sort of sits with inside of an organization and how we then set up the MCP that to be more effective. Where do we see like that going? Like where do we like?
There's probably a lot of complexity in managing it and checking the quality,
right?
And just you've built up stuff that's potentially there's a very complex audit trail. So let's say this makes a mistake, and there's been three different agentic systems talking to one another. You need to be able to track back where those errors and hallucinations have crept in.
So I book my flight. Or I say that I'm going to the beach, and then the first communication is to my a flight checker, and it books it through an airline, and then there's a mistake made between the airline and my calendar that's talking to it as well.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is we need to provide the context for which parts of that process are auditable? Where is it trackable? It can't be black box.
When you turn up at the airport and they say, we haven't got a Joe Herbert on this flight, somebody needs to know what the hell went wrong.
Okay.
And then how that's addressed. And that it's no different to any other data processing protocol, but like you've got multiple complex systems. How do you manage them in a way you can get reliability?
Yeah, that is just like a software engineering problem, though. Like the tools tend to call APIs somewhere in a software system that's been built, and those software systems will have like auditing capabilities and stuff all built in, won't they? So
yeah,
it's just standard process.
Some of it, I think, is tracking that you get consistent results each time, sort of thing. Like you query the holiday on Friday and get these results. You query it again on Saturday and it's just completely different places, completely different prices.
Yeah.
Is that correct, or has something changed there that's got it's misinterpreted? Yeah.
Okay. So it's still that context inside of that agentic AI system that needs to be tracked to make sure that it's doing what it's doing.
Supposed to, and it's giving consistent answers, it's giving the answers you want. So and the holiday firm doesn't want their agent to offer you a flight for $10.
Gotcha.
That kind of.
Okay. So how do we scale that concept up when it becomes in the field of view of data engineering? Like I'm leading into what we can do with Maya already today, but just what are the kind of that outside parameters that we as data engineering leaders need to be thinking about when it comes to designing how to inject this context?
It's how you get repeatability.
Right.
And that plays to Maya's strength, which is, let's say another agentic system calls Maya and asks for information.
Okay.
Maya's going to build a pipeline to get that information.
Okay.
So the next time somebody asks, it can refer to that pipeline and see it's already got it, rather than building it again from whole flesh and maybe putting different business.
So it's thinking intelligently about using its assets that it's already got available to it, as opposed to just creating net new.
Yeah, and a key point, I guess, in data engineering, one of the big artifacts or whatever we create is SQL, right? Like just generating a big block of SQL and an executor somewhere doesn't really cut the mustard. You can't validate, you can't test it.
You can't step through it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's where, with Maya and we kind of have that process of building a more of an abstraction on top that goes through a lot of processes and rigor around making sure that the pipeline we've built does the right thing and having the mechanisms to check as we build the pipelines that's good.
Yeah, is data coming through at each step? Is it
missing stupid results?
And so we as human data engineering leaders today need to be taking a step up into this world of agenticism to understand what the provision of those types of files and rules actually looks like. Like when you were getting started, like thinking, developer mode on now, like when you were getting started with playing around with some of these other tools that you're using, like how did you do that discovery, that self-learning? What did that look like?
As in self-discovery of like how to manage the context and things like that?
No, more like for your own personal like development, like how did you start on that journey of like looking for like the right sort of guidance and noise from the market, from your peers? Like, you've been building here, Code at Matillion for what, 10 years?
Like, yeah, not far off.
So you're already well adapted into like how to build and write really scalable, repeatable programs, right? But then there's always like, I know we talk about this all the time, like you're always trying to like think about what's next, how could that be better? And what advice would you give peers that are thinking around like, where do I go to learn how to learn and upskill here?
Always by doing. Like I'm self-taught software engineer, so like everything I know I learn by doing. So you can grab these tools, you can pick a change up, we use Jira to track issues. Well, go grab a ticket, go have a go. Were you successful? Were you not? Like maybe try and change the prompt. Just work with it. There's lots of resources out there for people. There's varying degreeing ends of the spectrum now where you've got people using things like Claude Code and spinning up like 20 different terminals to spin up multiple engineering tasks. And then you've got the guy that's just still using GitHub Copilot, like it's ChatGPT or something. And there's you know, we've got to, everyone's got to get with the agentic way of working.
Is there the agentic way of working? Let's come into that in a second.
If I could actually say it, that would be really down. There's someone using their voice.
I think there's a strong trend that I feel I'm in probably the same bucket as them. Folks that tend to apply the learn by doing approach seem to do well in this space, or seem to be. I think a lot of us that have ended up in this area in that line. Because it's moving so fast, if you wait for somebody to build you a training course, it's almost out of date by the time you watch it.
100%. Absolutely. Like, and then there's this constant self-updating context, like as a human trying to think about these problems of like, well, it couldn't do this when I built this 6 months ago, but now what if I try it again now?
We've done a whole bunch of, this is kind of working, it's not, results aren't quite good enough yet. All right, well, we'll park it for 3 months or 6 months and come back to it. Don't bin it. Just think and save it where it is. And the advances in the model and models and other techniques often then unblock, get you from almost working over the line to this is now good enough for use.
Yeah, we've seen so much of that. It starts with doing, right? It starts with just
you're learning while you're getting, and you know, we were learning with those janky chatbots that impersonated, made your boss talk in a silly voice or whatever it was. Yeah, but we were learning the techniques as we played around with it.
Can I add, like, the important thing, if I can actually speak, is that, not because I'm interrupting, sorry. I mean, is it because I can't get my words out today? Is that, like, you have these advocates and people in engineering like we do, and there's, like I said, there's, like, the two ends of the spectrum where the really experienced ones of agentic coding tools become your advocates for all the people in your business that aren't really there yet. And that's not because they're doing something wrong. They might just not be the person that gets to grips with the coding tools because it's a completely different way of working.
The plus of the coding tools or the assistance is it lets you experiment faster so you can learn by doing more.
Mm. And then also, going back to Maya, like I've had it recently where I've asked Maya, how can I give you better prompts? Yeah. And it's actually intelligently aware enough to then generate more information for me about how I can change the context files that I've put into my project in the data productivity.
They're probably worth a discussion, actually, the notion of the context files.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like let's set the scene here. So where we are cutting edge delivering of Maya, an agentic AI platform for our customers today. We're leading the way in what the future of data engineering looks like. And a big part of how Maya plays a role in Matillion's future is being able to adapt to the context and the data landscape of those customer environments. And so to help Maya then be more performant in that space, we've got these context files. Now, what the heck is a markdown file, Sam? Like, just like I know that they're cool, but right, I still don't understand what they mean and what do they play a role in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's like a nice way of defining documentation, but it's like code. It's like it's richer text, basically. And what you'll end up with is, like, I mean, people who use GitHub or any markdown renderer, it just, you can use special syntax to render the document more nicely. So you can bold headers, you can do formatting and highlighting. And the reason why I think you tend to see context files in agentic tools using Markdown is because they've been trained on so much text and there's so much Markdown out there. Right. And certain things, like, you know, a well-written document by a human being is better understood by another human being because they've been trained on so much text from humans. They're actually really good and understand, you know, if you put emphasis around something because you bold it, or you have a section that's got a really, you know, a massive header above it, and it's like, this is really important, then they will listen to that in the document.
So, like, I use bold and uppercase when I'm like, mate, please pay attention to this.
And then
we're saying that actually the LLMs themselves can understand the context behind the, I won't use the context there, hold on. They can understand the importance and significance that a human is trying to place on these instructions by the way in which the markdown. Okay. Gotcha. Right. So now we've got our markdown files. What does that mean for our customers in terms of how they can think about giving better instructions to Maya?
Well, I mean, it depends on, like, the business context that they might have. So like, relevant information to the problem or the project they're in can be really helpful. Like, we do the same thing in coding tools. So we might include an extract about what this particular software project is for, because we have multiple of them. And then also, like, standards and naming conventions and code style formats and potentially how we run tests and things like that. It's the same in a data engineering project. Like, you add all the context you think is most relevant that your coding agent needs to know.
Right. Could be stuff that's as simple as the raw data coming in is in this schema. Here's the URLs or connection details for a couple of the sources you might want to connect to. Little notes like saying any table that begins with JW underscore is just Julian's temporary tables, ignore them.
Gotcha.
And yeah, 28-day car is the one of the 10 different revenue fields we've got when somebody asks you how much money we're making. Those kind of bits that you'd learn by asking around if you're the human data engineer.
Gotcha. So it's providing the knowledge of the...
It's like you're bringing a new employee to the team, right?
Yeah.
Just got to give Maya the basic notes, like, here's where you get started.
Yeah.
Here's where you hit that.
And I feel like that tees us up for a really great conversation we might have next time on semantic layer and that importance of what that semantic layer plays like and looks like in the field. But Julian, Sam, that is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining this session.
Cool. Thanks for listening to the Agents of Data podcast. The podcast is brought to you by intelligent data integration platform Matillion. To discover agentic data engineering, visit matillion.com/Maya. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what you think of everything we discussed over on Matillion's LinkedIn and Instagram.